Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. St. Louis is known as a city of neighborhoods. Fact is, some of those neighborhoods are in much better shape than others, and some are on the brink of becoming distressed. What's being done to identify those at-risk neighborhoods, and what can be done to keep them from deteriorating? It's the subject of a major study titled On the Edge, America's Middle Neighborhoods. It'll be the subject of a forum later today at Washington University and is the subject of our first segment on the program. Joining me are two contributors to On the Edge. Henry Weber is professor of practice and executive vice chancellor for administration at Washington University. Alan Malik is a senior fellow with the Center for Community Progress. Its slogan reads, "Vacant spaces into vibrant places." Also with us is Reginald Scott, executive director with Lee May Housing Partnership here in St. Louis. Thank you all so much for being with us. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hank Weber, let me start with you. What characterizes a distressed neighborhood?
Oh, distressed neighborhoods are neighborhoods that have high degree of poverty, usually declining real estate values, usually are losing population. In St. Louis, those neighborhoods tend to be losing population quite rapidly, and places that are experiencing, in most cases, high degrees of mobility of population.
And we have a lot of them in the St. Louis area, apparently.
We certainly have a large number of distressed neighborhoods, and one of the challenges is that all of us face, we really face two challenges. One is how do we improve those neighborhoods, but the other is how do we ensure that middle neighborhoods don't become distressed neighborhoods?
Alan Malik, do we have much of a fix on that?
Well, it's really difficult. I mean, a lot of people have done good things individually. But when you look at the overall picture of middle neighborhoods, let me step back. A middle neighborhood, basically, we're talking about the areas that historically in the cities housed the middle class and the solid working class. You know, areas which had a lot of home ownership, areas that had a lot of families. And those areas, a lot of times, are losing ground. You know, there's a smaller middle class than there used to be. There are fewer families raising kids than there used to be. And so it's really tough. So the key thing that people have found that seems to make a difference is it's about building demand. It's about making a neighborhood attractive enough so that middle-income people will stay there if they're already there and that can attract new people who will raise their families there. And these are mostly single-family neighborhoods also, single-family houses. So that's really the trick, is to how to build demand.
Reggie Scott, where does Lee May fit into this whole picture?
So they've nicely described Lee May. It is a middle-market neighborhood, middle-income neighborhood that has not experienced severe distress conditions, characteristics that we typically have seen in some other neighborhoods, but it is in transition without some coordinated and planned intervention strategies.
Hank, is it the fact that we normally look at extremes in our population and in the places that we live, that maybe middle neighborhoods are not getting the attention they need from the rest of us?
I think that that's right. I think that what you see is very strong neighborhoods like Lafayette Square or the Central West End in the city, neighborhoods like Clayton in the suburbs. They tend to have regional attractions. They tend to be places that we may go to go out. We may go – they're places that have very large job centers, Centene and Clayton, the Washington University Medical Center in the Central West End, et cetera. And then, of course, we know the areas of great poverty. I mean, if we think about what the middle neighborhoods are in St. Louis, places like North Point, a far north side, predominantly African-American neighborhood, Bevo, a predominantly white and immigrant neighborhood on the south side, Visitation, just north of Del Mar, often these are places that are places of predominantly their residential neighborhoods. They don't have large commercial areas. And unless you're living there, these are often not places that are top of mind.
Alan, in looking at your report, mm-hmm. it seems to me that most of the emphasis is on housing.
Yeah, because, again, as Hank just mentioned, these neighborhoods we're talking about are mainly residential neighborhoods. They're mainly neighborhoods that were built out of, you know, anything from the 1880s up through the 1950s and 1960s with single-family houses for people to raise families in. And so it does come down to housing, but it also comes down to jobs. I mean, if there aren't enough jobs for middle-income people, people who are not, you know, highly skilled people with graduate degrees and things like that, those neighborhoods are going to suffer as well. So from the neighborhood standpoint, it's about housing. It's about finding people who want to own these houses. But at the same time, there is a people issue here, which is about making sure that there are enough jobs in the larger region for middle class people.
And it's also about people's preferences, and it's about demography at a big level. So we do have a number of neighborhoods in St. Louis and in the inner ring suburbs that are growing, but they're primarily growing with young millennials. They're primarily growing with people under 35 who are either not yet raising children or are raising very small children. And these are neighborhoods whose historic base was about raising children and family neighborhoods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just one thing, we just have fewer of those families, period. I mean, historically, go back 50, 60 years, you know, 40% or more, 40 to 50% of all of the households in these cities were married couples with kids. And most of the others were either people whose kids had just grown or people who were going to be having kids pretty soon. Yeah. Today, nationally, it's 20%. And in St. Louis, it's probably somewhere like 8 or 9%.
Reggie, you wanted to say something.
And in Lee May, I mean, it's interesting, consistent. We have a significant percentage of households, homes, that are single family based on the historic nature of community neighborhoods in St. Louis. And our challenge is to create better housing conditions than what is there now to retain the existing homeowners and attract new homeowners and property owners into the community. And we've developed a community development strategy for a targeted area in Lee May that's the most, if you will, distressed. It's nowhere near the bottom, but it is transitioning, and so we've got a plan.
What is the strategy, basically?
So it is a multi-stage strategy. A significant amount of it is infill housing at some scale, where we're going in and demolishing derelict properties or vacant, abandoned properties and building new homes where we can. We do rehabilitation of existing. But a lot of it has been new home construction. We've built over approximately 70 new homes in Lee May over the last 5 to 6 years. We are also looking at infrastructure issues so that the quality of life in general is better. We are looking at open spaces to make sure there's plenty of public space and potentially walkable space, which is the new trend. And also trying to fill in at some smaller scale some of the commercial spaces along South Broadway.
Because the jobs are a key to this whole thing.
Yes, and there's a correlation.
Hank, in what you've looked at, have you just looked at the city or are you looking into the broader metro area?
Oh, no. Many middle neighborhoods in our region are not in the city. Mm-hmm. So you look at places like Pasadena Hills, a small inner ring municipality near Umsol, predominantly African American, and actually, unfortunately, in the north suburbs, we've seen a number of middle neighborhoods which have become distressed neighborhoods over time. Mm-hmm. But closer to the Central Corridor, Maplewood is a classic.
But it's a city, not a neighborhood.
It's
a municipality.
but the point, if you look at these by census tract, you'll find that almost every census tract in these places are, and places like Pasadena Hills are small enough that they're really a single census tract.
Yeah, in our neighborhood, in essence. I mean, yeah. Lemay is a big neighborhood. It's about 16,000 folks, but it's unincorporated. We have a Lemay Neighborhood Association, and we work kind of in concert with St. Louis County government to improve the conditions.
Yeah. Alan, my understanding is that in this area, then, we're talking about 40% of the neighborhoods are considered middle neighborhood. How does that stack up with other parts of the country?
It's pretty consistent, you know, from city to city. I mean, some more, some less, but it's in that 30-40% range in most cities. I think the difference between most cities is that some have more upper, fewer lower, some are in the reverse. But that 30-40% is pretty typical, except in a few places think about Washington or San Francisco, where the demand pressure and the price pressure is more or less eliminating middle neighborhoods from the equation. But when you leave those aside, it's pretty much consistent from one city to the next. I think one big difference is that in some cities, you're seeing more of them trending upwards. In other cities, you're seeing more of them trending downwards.
Hank, you look like you wanted to add to that.
Yes, and the challenge in St. Louis is that when we look over time, more neighborhoods are trending downward than are trending upward. Mm-hmm. There are some that have trended upward. They're predominantly neighborhoods in the Central Corridor. But, you know, of the neighborhoods we've talked about, some of the neighborhoods, the challenge is for Dogtown, for example, which is mentioned as which is also a middle neighborhood. That's a neighborhood one can easily imagine trending upward. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to work to keep certain north side neighborhoods that were really founded on a manufacturing base of the city that no longer exists to the same degree.
When you look at some of your maps and you look at that, north of the Del Mar Divide, if you will, the picture is very, very clear.
Yeah, and I think this raises another point, which is really important. I mean, a lot of people are concerned about gentrification, about some of these neighborhoods being gentrified. And I won't say that's not a relevant concern. But if you look at a city like St. Louis, that's a lesser concern in many respects than the fact that you've got lots of neighborhoods where people, middle-income families, African Americans and so forth, are losing the value of their assets, are losing their quality of life because those neighborhoods are declining or are at risk of declining. And that is affecting a lot more people than gentrification is. And I think that's something people shouldn't be concerned about the implications of gentrification, but people should be spending, I think, a lot more attention focusing on the implications of neighborhood decline.
Alan said something very important, which is one of the immediate things that comes out of neighborhood decline. These are single-family neighborhoods. These are families who most of their wealth is in their house.
Correct.
Most people don't have financial assets. They have their house. When you see housing values decline, and we've seen that in considerable parts of St. Louis, you're seeing a massive amount of middle and working class people who are seeing their retirement go away.
I have to take a break now. We'll come back that point in just a moment. We are talking about middle neighborhoods in St. Louis, and we'll continue that conversation in just a moment with our guests, Henry Weber of Washington University, Alan Malik with the Center for Community Progress, and Reginald Scott with the Lemay Housing Partnership. Back in just a moment, and we have some calls. We'll take those when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation on middle neighborhoods with Henry Weber of Washington University, Alan Malik of the Center for Community Progress, and Reginald Scott with Lemay Housing Partnership. The situation here in St. Louis, I think, could have been helped somewhat with the passage of Proposition NS during the last election. You all familiar with that, Alan? I wouldn't expect you to be. That was a neighborhood stabilization proposal to take vacant housing and make them suitable for rehabbing. There are thousands of them in the city. Is that the kind of thing that could really help the middle neighborhood situation, Reggie?
Sure. I mean, particularly in the city, a lot of the properties are city-owned properties that resources had not been available to stabilize the building. So ultimately, they end up being demolished. And they also become sources of crime and so forth and eyesores. So efforts to stabilize those, to reposition them so that they can be redeveloped sooner than later, at a better cost as well, is important.
Hank, makes sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, the evidence is really overwhelming of how negative vacant and distressed and problem properties are in neighborhoods. And to the degree that we can deal with that problem, being they either vacant, long-term vacant problem, or problem properties that become centers of drugs or other illegal activity, that's something that you can do, and it's something that's relatively small in scale in most middle neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. The problem of vacancy in St. Louis is very large overall, but one of the things we need to do is make sure that that problem doesn't grow.
Is this unique to St. Louis, Alan?
Oh, good Lord, no. No, I mean,
sometimes you ask questions when you know the answer.
No, St. Louis is certainly pretty high on the list because St. Louis has lost so much of its historic peak population, and more than most cities. But even so, I mean, this is a national problem, and it's not just a big city problem. It's a small city problem. It's a rural problem. You go to parts of the Deep South or Appalachia or the Plains, and you'll have this. It's a national problem, and we don't have a national solution, but some cities are tackling it, I think, more aggressively than others.
Let's take some phone calls. We have some folks who want to get into this conversation, so let's bring them in. Ron and Ferguson, you're first up. Go ahead.
A couple of bullet points I wanted to hit on is that we have a declining tax base due to the Internet. We see malls closing. So at the same time, we're asking schools to do more. They have less tax revenue. In St. Louis County, I think it's a travesty. I believe there should be a 1% earnings tax on anybody that works in St. Louis County that does not live here. There are, if you look at the school systems, the police, the fire, throughout parts of the county, specifically North County, which I don't like to use that adjective, most of the people that work in the school districts, fire, police, don't even live anywhere close to this area, but they're gaining good-paying jobs and taking their monies elsewhere and not spending a dime in this community, and they need to be paying a 1% earnings tax to help support the fire, police, the streets, and things like that.
All right.
The trickle-down economics started this trend, what I believe with the Reagan policies of trickle-down, and things still have not trickled down. And the next thing is the media. The media has done a great job of sacrificing the black community by over-reporting negative stories and under-reporting positive stories. And I'll go back to the adjective North County.
All right, Ron, let me stop you there because we have a time constraint here, and I want to get some reaction to a couple of points that you brought up. Who would like to start? Has the Internet ruined the commerce in the malls and what have you?
The Internet has is certainly a major cause of the decline of retailing across the country, and that's taken dollars out. But I think there's a deeper point, and I think that the caller got it 100% right. Middle neighborhoods are a lot of the tax base of cities and towns. 40% of us live there. And what you really worry about is if they weaken, the tax base declines, the ability to offer services that make those communities attractive for people want to live, particularly schools and criminal justice services, and you worry about a death spiral.
What about the media, Reggie?
Well, that's a challenge. I mean, clearly trying to figure out some balance out there is important, and it's a concern on, you know, all sides.
Alan, thoughts?
Yeah, I think certainly the media perception. I mean, this country has a big race issue. to put it mildly.
This community does as well.
So does the St. Louis area, and that kind of affects all of these issues a lot more powerfully than some people would like to acknowledge.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Jennifer in Baldwin then. She has a question related to Lemay. Jennifer, you there?
Yes, sir. Hi. I am actually a former Lemay resident.
Hello.
I was wondering if Mr. Scott could speak to the impact that the River City Casino has had and if the casino has kept their promises.
I will tell you, the River City Casino has been a great partner in Lemay. There was reference to tax base. So that's the humongous piece. The school district has benefited dramatically from the investment in the casino. Additionally, there are dollars that have been generated by the county's arrangement on a lease agreement with the casino on the land that generates revenues for a community investment program where nonprofits can apply and use resources to improve the community there. And then finally, jobs. I mean, it's a huge employer now in the community, and opportunities are there for Lemay residents and others in the metro area to be employed.
A lot of communities here and across the country are relying on casinos to help them come back and just maintain or sustain what they have.
That's true, and it's a mixed bag. I mean, some casinos have clearly made a difference for places. But others, like, you know, you think of the casino in Gary, really hasn't changed things. Most of the people who have the jobs don't necessarily live in Gary. It's off in one corner. And the other thing, of course, is casinos don't really add jobs in terms of the larger region. But what they do is they take maybe 1,000 or a couple of thousand jobs that have been scattered across the region. And as they sort of shift the economy and generate revenue, they concentrate those jobs. So they're really creating a lot of winners and losers. And if you're right there, you can benefit from it. But if you're not, you don't. But just one other thing is, I think one casino that's really helped the community visibly is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where they lost the Bethlehem Steel, which was the employer in that city. And they were able to get a casino that actually came into the middle of what had been the steel mill and has kind of helped catalyze the redevelopment of the steel mill into a very diverse commercial and entertainment and other center. And it's right in the heart of the city, and the jobs are in the city. And that's made a huge difference to that place.
And we've tried to really use the casino as a catalyst for economic development and housing development in our community, because it abuts our target area. And we engaged the staff and the management at the casino, and they're very receptive and engaged.
Let's, in the time that we have left, let's talk a little bit about what can be done. We've touched upon it in various ways. Hank, I'll start with you. Okay, so what do we do? What is the grand strategy?
I think there isn't a grand strategy. I think the strategy has to be neighborhood by neighborhood. I think that first thing is to recognize that you're in competition. If you are a neighborhood leader, and by the way, I think the most important actors here are neighborhood organizations and very local elected officials. Mm-hmm. This is not one where Washington's going to solve this problem. People like Reggie in LeMay. You need to figure out who can you attract to the neighborhood and why are people living there? And how can you improve the quality of their life? And how can you market yourself to people who might move? One thing that clearly has to be part of it is building pride, building connections, make you feel like you live there. Little things matter. Farmers markets matter. Community picnics matter. Really good parks matter, where people can gather together. So I think it is a matter of thinking very hard and doing very targeted things. Focus on problem properties. Focus on vacant land.
But if I just may say so, you indicated at the very beginning, and I'll put this to Reggie, that one of the most important features is jobs, having jobs. How can your organization, how can the community draw jobs into it?
So we do a combination of things, I think, related to that. I mean, some of the community development, housing development work we do is creating new rooftops and sustaining rooftops. And there is a direct correlation between economic development and housing population and viable economically viable households. So we work hard on that front. And then we try to advance the capacity or build the capacity of the folks in the community. But financial capabilities, counseling, et cetera, to make them smarter consumers.
Have you seen improvement in recent months, years?
Yes. Yes, very much so. In Lima, we've had a lot of success over the last 5-6 years, taking down properties, a problem, building new homes, improving infrastructure. Yes.
Good for you. I mean, that's certainly what everybody wants to hear. Alan, let me come back to you. Ideas for resolving these issues.
I think the biggest issue is, you know, kind of picking up on what Hank said, is building, sustaining and building demand. And you look at the physical environment in these cities. You know, what Reggie was talking about in terms of building attractive new infill houses, a lot of people like a new house. In another city, one neighborhood organization is actually going to these 50s houses that had one bath and putting in a second bath, because that makes a huge difference in terms of whether people want to buy that as a homeowner. In Shaw, the CDC there actually went out, they found all the vacant properties, they identified the owners, they found, got the owners willing to sell at a reasonable price in a lot of cases, and then they match-made the owners with developers who were willing to buy the property for $5,000, $10,000, and put their own money into fixing it up and then selling it to an investor. So there are a lot of different specific ways you can go about it, but the big thing is you have to try to stabilize and build demand for these neighborhoods, because ultimately it's demand that keeps the neighborhood alive.
And this means working on the ground, parcel by parcel, block by block. So the example that Alan gave, the example that Reggie gave, these are looking at individual properties and saying, is there a way we can turn a deficit into an asset?
That's correct.
We are going to have to leave it at that, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being with us. Hank Weber, great to see you from Washington University, of course. Alan Malik with us with the Center for Community Progress. Reggie Scott of the Lee May Housing Partnership in St. Louis. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll mention, I had indicated early on that there was an event later today. The Forum on Middle Neighborhoods is taking place this evening at 4 o'clock to 5:45 at Brown Hall at Washington University. So you're all going to be there, and
yes.
I'm sure you're going to have a good turnout for that. Thank you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.